Fire danger goes to very high and extreme in western Montana as new fires break out. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us about the state's efforts to clear up confusion about the Affordable Care Act. And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with some of the actors in the new film Winter in the Blood, including lead actor Chaskay Spencer, about the film's authentic portrayal of Native Americans. Fire officials today ramped up the fire danger status in parts of west central Montana. The Missoula County Fire Protection Association has determined the fire danger within Missoula County to now be very high and extreme on Lolo National Forest west of Missoula. MCFPA's Chris Johnson says the fire danger ratings are based on two different energy release values.
So how rapidly a fire is going to burn a piece of material that's ready to burn. So the fires west of Missoula on the Lolo National Forest will burn more intensely than the east side. It might not be so much that the average citizen can see it, but for our firefighters, it means a lot.
Johnson says forest fuels such as grasses are rapidly curing out.
They sure are, and even larger fuels, you know, a large tree that, say, was hit by a mountain pine beetle a few years ago is now on the ground. Those are reaching levels that are also causing the fires to spread through those fuels as well. So anything you see out there in the woods that looks like it's available to burn sure will, and will do so in a rapid fashion.
Stage 1 fire restrictions will go into effect across west central Montana at 12:01 next Thursday, August 1st.
Campfires are only going to be allowed in designated campsites as we move into Stage 1 restrictions. And specifically with smoking, yeah, the restrictions require that someone smoking out of doors does so in an area that's cleared of flammable material beneath them in a 3-foot circle. You can still smoke in your car or still smoke in a structure that's out in the woods, but can't just smoke where there's grass. It could start a fire real easily.
Outdoor debris burning by permit has been closed for some time now, but Johnson says firefighters are still routinely responding to debris fire that get out from under those who light them. The West Mullen fire, burning 9 miles northwest of Superior, has now consumed close to 6,200 acres. But Information Officer Pat McKelvey says crews continue to make excellent progress despite the hot, dry, steep, and rugged conditions. The West Mullen Fire Incident Command Post hosted a special guest this morning.
The former governor, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, made a visit here, not as an actor, but he was here as one of the executive producers of a documentary that's being produced for Showtime. He came in this morning about 5:30 and attended the 6 a.m. briefing of the crews. Actually, was given the opportunity to address the crews about the documentary. It's about global warming and climate change and what that's doing to the fire, the wildland fire world, essentially, and the risks and all that are involved with that.
Schwarzenegger's film crew is following a hotshot crew featured in the production that also happens to be assigned to the West Mullen Fire. Meanwhile, firefighters responded to a fire north of the old Stimson Mill in Bonner, east of Missoula. Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation spokeswoman Cindy Super says the 4 to 5 acre fire is across the river from the log yard. Resources from Missoula Rural Fire, DNRC, and Clinton Rural Fire have brought in 2 helicopters, and a hotshot crew is on the way. The DNRC asks the public stay clear of firefighting operations. The cause of the fire is under investigation. No homes are being threatened.
And in other news from around the state is trying to clear up confusion regarding the rollout of the Affordable Care Act next year. Individuals will need to have some sort of health insurance starting January of 2014 or face a penalty. Many businesses will also have to provide coverage for employees. The state will launch a new online marketplace for health coverage options in October. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us many businesses don't yet feel prepared.
I think that it's really an opportunity for us to figure out.
State Auditor Monica Lynn Dean holding an outreach discussion for stakeholders about the Affordable Care Act.
How are we going to educate Montanans about the opportunities that are available in the new health insurance exchanges?
In the room, representatives from the 3 carriers that will be offering insurance on the exchange, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana, Pacific Source, and the newly formed Montana Health Co-op. And groups representing constituencies affected by the exchanges and the healthcare law rollout, hospitals, physicians, consumer groups. Small business trade groups say their members do not feel ready for all the requirements coming up with the law. State Director of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, Riley Johnson, says his members are very busy running their companies. They don't have time to peruse websites or attend webinars about the law.
They're very, very confused, and that's the answer I'm getting from our members out on the field all over Montana. They're very confused. They don't have enough details out on this. There's not what I call meat on the bones for this thing yet. And yet the deadline is coming.
The Affordable Care Act says businesses with 50 or more employees will have to provide health coverage to their workers by January of 2014. However, the Obama administration has postponed any enforcement of that provision for a full year. The state is recommending businesses get into compliance ahead of that late deadline, but only a small number of Montana businesses fit this criteria, and many of those already offer insurance to employees. U.S. Small Business Administration District Director Wayne Gardella says his and most of the other groups attending State Auditor Lindeen's meeting are doing their best to inform people about what they need to do. Still, he says many businesses are going to need face-to-face explanations.
At some point, it's going to have to be a grassroots effort, and they're actually going to need to meet one-on-one with an ACA technical expert to actually get into the weeds of what they need to know and what they don't need to know.
He says that's going to take a combined effort of trade groups and the government. Both he and State Auditor Lindeen say what is really needed is a unified message, a consistent message to make it clear. Lindeen says she's hearing business owners don't want broad definitions of what the Affordable Care Act will do.
All they want to know is, what are my choices in terms of coverage? How much is it going to cost me? How much is it going to cost my employees? You know, bottom line.
She says her office is planning to release prices for plans offered on the upcoming health insurance exchange in mid-August. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Officials in Yellowstone National Park have released the name of a 73-year-old Montana man who died after losing his footing while fishing in the Yellowstone River. Officials say Ernest Trim of Ennis, Montana, died July 17th. Trim was fishing in the Yellowstone River near the Nez Perce picnic ground between Fishing Bridge and Canyon when witnesses say he lost his footing in the chest-deep water while attempting to cross the river. He was carried about 200 yards downstream in the swift current. Another visitor pulled him out of the water and started CPR. Park rangers and medical staff were notified but were unable to revive him. The accident remains under investigation.
The Cascade County Health Department and the owners of several casinos in Great Falls are in a battle over a workaround the casino owners believe allows their customers to gamble while smoking. The Great Falls Tribune reports brothers Doug and C.K. Palagi and their attorney and business partner Gregory Smith filed a lawsuit against the Cascade City County Board of Health after they were threatened with a misdemeanor citation alleging their smoking shelters violated Montana's Clean Indoor Air Act. The act prohibits smoking in enclosed public places, but allows for smoking shelters that, quote, are partially open to the outside air, unquote. The Palagis say their shelters have open slots where the walls meet the roof. Employees don't deliver drinks to the shelters, which are closed off from the rest of the casino. A trial is expected this fall.
A Republican lawmaker's support of bills opposed by the oil industry may have cost him his job earlier this year. Representative Austin Knudsen says the bills were prompted by issues landowners have had dealing with oil companies. The bills sought to give landowners greater protections. The Great Falls Tribune reports that emails from a Board of Oil and Gas Conservation employees indicate that the Tool law firm in Plentywood planned to fire him over the measures. The law represents oil interests. Knudsen said he was told at the time that the law firm wanted him to leave because of the burden his legislative service put on the firm. The law firm did not return a call seeking comment. The board's emails were obtained by the Montana Environmental Information Center.
A federal judge has rejected a challenge to a U.S. Forest Service plan to bar motorized and mechanized vehicles and 322,000 acres of a new recommended wilderness areas in the Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forest. 22 plaintiffs sued the Forest Service over its 2009 plan to ban the use of snowmobiles, off-road vehicles, and mountain bikes in certain parts of the southwestern Montana forest until Congress decided whether they should become permanent wilderness areas. U.S. District Judge Sam Haddon ruled today the plaintiffs did not meet the legal threshold to sue over two of their claims. The judge dismissed their three other claims that the Forest Service violated the National Environmental Policy Act. Haddon says the federal agency fulfilled its obligations under NEPA to study the effects of banning motorized uses in those areas.
Bert Lindler is retired now, but he is still doing a lot of work. His volunteer efforts have been recognized many times before, and today the city of Missoula is awarding Lindler the title of Neighborhood Volunteer of the Year. Reporter Ruth Eddy has more on Lindler's work and motivation.
The neighborhood that I work in is Grant Creek. That's where I live, and so I'm pretty committed to making that be as nice a place as I can.
Lindler moved from outside a big city in Virginia 18 years ago. His time in the city has motivated his work for wildlife, caring for trout streams and elk herds.
This is pretty nifty, and I value it because I didn't always have it, and I want other people to enjoy it.
Walking in Grant Creek, Lindler points out at bear markings on a fallen tree. It's been about 5 years, but for two winters, a bear called the base of that cottonwood tree a home. He says it's things like that that make Grant Creek a special place worth protecting.
Well, there aren't many places where bears den within 150 feet of an office building.
The 64-year-old is a fast walker. Lindler says it's because he has a lot to get done. Most of his work is physical, and that's the way he likes it.
You can actually see when you're done that you've made a difference. When you pull weeds, when you build fence, you can see what you've done.
Lindler works with a lot of controversial issues, but he says he doesn't worry about what's right. His goal is to make things better. Lindler has devoted the last 8 years to, among other things, making cattle fences elk-friendly.
I don't know how to make it perfect, but this is how I've learned to make it better.
Better, in this case, is a white, smooth, high-tensile wire 42 inches off the ground. The wire, opposed to barbed wire, helps the elk see and jump it, and even if they don't get high enough, their feet won't get caught. Lindler's work ranges from applying for federal grants to digging fence posts. He says he wants to be known as someone who thinks 200 years ahead.
Rewarded by knowing that my work is making a long-term difference.
Lindler says working in your neighborhood is the best place to start. It's a place where one person with some help can make a big difference. And his goal is simple.
I'm trying to make it possible for the wildlife to survive in the world we have created for ourselves. But it's a lot of work to make this happen. And it's not work that pays.
Which is, of course, why Lindler is being named the Volunteer of the Year. He says having a day officially named after him isn't necessary, but it helps.
The most valuable part of that is if it helps you accomplish other things.
Bert Lindler will be honored at Missoula's City Council meeting this evening at 7 p.m. in Council Chambers. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Ruth Eddy. As we reported last week, the new film, Winter in the Blood, based on the late Montana author James Welch's novel, had its Montana premiere over the weekend in Missoula. The film and novel tell the story of a young Native American man coming to terms with a painful past and with his life growing up on a northern Montana reservation. The cast features several Native American actors, including Chas K. Spencer, who plays the lead character, Virgil Firstrays, and Michael Spears, who plays the character Raymond Longknife. Spencer grew up on the Fort Peck Reservation, and Spears grew up on a reservation in South Dakota. The cast also includes actress Dana Wheeler Nicholson, who plays the waitress Malvina in the film, and who in real life is married to the film's co-director Alex Smith. All three actors recently sat down in our studios with news director Sally Mock to talk about the film, which it was shot in a short 22 days along Montana's High Line.
Longer.
For Cheske, it was a lifetime.
Well, I'm sure it was intense. You were in almost every scene.
Yeah. It was 22 days. Yeah, that is a pretty tight schedule. We were 6 days a week. Yeah, we shot 6 days a week. So one day off.
Well, I didn't shoot 6 days a week. That would be you, my friend. Yeah. Cheske was 24/7 on the job.
He was
unbelievable.
A lot of stamina to do that.
Oh, my Lord.
When you're shooting in that tight a schedule, do you ever get out of character?
I don't think you have time to, really. I mean, yeah. on your day off, you're still going over scripts and stuff to, like, I don't know, for me, the way I would my day off, I'd still go over my script and, like, see what other ideas I could pop up with or things and notes and stuff, but you're just surrounded by it, so we're stuck in Haver, too, so.
Oh, Haver.
Yeah, so not much going on.
You could just go get another cheeseburger if you wanted to.
Well, that's probably good in terms of the work, anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. Very good. I mean, we're giggling, but it's amazing up there. It's amazing. I've never seen anything like, you know, like it. I come from a very different place, so for me,
much more urban.
Yeah, I come from New York City, man. This is like, you know, what on? It's so incredible in every way. I don't know. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved this place.
How do you think the physical setting influenced how you played the role?
Oh, completely. I mean, it always does. If you're lucky, it usually does. Especially if it's so unfamiliar and you are sensitive and you are someone who can open to that. You know, the weather, the people around, the atmosphere, the history there, you can feel things and you let those things come through you and I don't know how to really articulate that without sounding like a real jerk, but you know, it's part of what actors hopefully can do, you know.
Because when I talked to Alex and Andrew, the directors, they said there was a lot of pressure to film somewhere else.
It's more about incentives. It's yeah. not really it's the incentives. Canada yeah. offers such yeah. incredible incentives, and for an indie movie, something so low budget, that means a lot, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and so they just needed it to be here. If that was,
it would have been maybe a little different if it hadn't been filmed here. Do you think?
Oh yes.
Yeah, I think so. If you see in the film Montana as a character in the whole movie,
it is.
You can feel it. Yeah, yeah. It's you know, we're from Montana. Oh, you know, Spears is from Montana, or sorry, Dakota.
Or South Dakota,
Dakota,
right?
But you've been around. You know this. Yeah, you know.
Michael, how familiar was your character to you?
It was definitely a stretch for me. I hardly get the chance to play the Ray Longknives of features. You know, I'm usually playing a hero or
you were kind of the bad guy.
Yeah,
in this
film. I was kind of the villain here a little bit, and definitely used a lot of my all of them to draw from all of, you know, experiences that helped me to develop Ray's character.
And I'd ask you the same question, Jessica. How familiar is Virgil? There's an
pretty
inside
close.
Joke there, I'm sure.
I would say, you know, I pulled a lot from people I've met along the way in life. You know, I based the characters, the physical mannerisms on a friend of mine who I grew up with. And it was, I remember after reading the script, I thought, this is a movie about this guy, my friend, who grew up on the reservation. Talented artist, really a good man, you're very charming with the ladies, he's always never had a problem with that. Somehow I just didn't get the breaks, you know, things just didn't really work out, but he's good, he's in a good place. But you know, then I have cousins like that and stuff, so I just kind of started pulling things from that. And you know, reading the book, finding a correlation between me and the characters, which you know, that's what I do. So it And I'd been working on this for about a year before we went to film, so I had enough time to prep, and I was ready to go by the time I got there. So I was ready to film. I was on all cylinders, so I was ready to go.
You were definitely on all cylinders, by the way. There are some actors in the movie who have been acting for a long time as Native American actors. Gary Farmer,
yeah, Farmer
is one of the more well-known. How was it working with them and being around them and hearing what I'm sure are their stories?
You know, Gary comes with a lot of, like, weight to his character, and he's been around for a long time, so.
Yeah. Great actor.
Yeah, great actor. I remember watching him as a kid, you know, I remember first seeing him on Miami Vice. Long time ago. He played
so
like a drug
awesome.
Dealer. Long time ago. It was like season two of Miami Vice. you know, he's been around long enough to where I got to briefly work with him, or got to meet him on Skins. I didn't get to work with him. But I'd met him a few times before, and he's always been a really cool guy. But working with him, it was just, it was, what I liked is that the scenes were never done the same way, but they were. So he's really good at keeping up on his craft and stuff like that. And it just kept me on your toes, for me anyway. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Dana, you play a waitress that, for anyone who's gone to a rural Montana bar, she's very familiar.
In Havre, remember that bar, that when we filmed in, the woman who ran it, Alex leaned over to me the first night I got there. He was like, that's you in, you know, that's her in 10 years or something, or someone who didn't get out, who never leaves. And it's true. It's she's, that was the thing, is that even though she's from out of town, she's in every bar, in every place. You know, she's that woman maybe that you think, how'd she get here? What's she doing here? Who are her people? You know, where, you know, and so thank you, I guess, is what I'm saying.
And I'm sure she's saying, what am I doing here, too, at some
point. That's the thing.
The book and the film don't shy away from some of the harsh realities of life on the res. But it's also a story of survival.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what really turned me on with the script when I read it, was it is about survival, and that it's a reality that a lot of things have been coming up with natives in film lately. And it's one of those where you get to humanize instead of the Native American playing, you know, the mystical medicine man and stuff like that. Actually, it's a human character, and, you know, this is a reality of it. I grew up on reservations all over.
Both you and Michael.
Yeah. It's, you know, we know guys like that, you know, and we've been in experiences like that. You know, we've been to, like, the parties where your cousin tries to stab you, you know? and then you're friends again, you know? You know, that's just the way it is. That's normal for us. So, you know, it's
Juarez,
that's.
Did you grow up?
Sounds fun.
Fort Peck. But
I was just there.
You know, that's just a reality of it. And the other films that I really like that was really a pretty realistic is like Skins, Smoke Signals. You know, you get. And it's only an independent film, but you get a rare look inside those. But it's always an independent film. I've never seen a big budget movie that's ever portrayed us really.
Well, part of that is that they can't. Mm-hmm. Often cast native.
No.
You know, because they need to
have a box office.
Have a box office.
They have a
so
box office
that's
draw.
That's uh-huh. often, and the only reason Dances with Wolves could happen with natives, I guess, is because Kevin Costner was such a huge name.
And he fought for it. He fought, right?
Michael, you were a child actor in Dances
that
with Wolves,
was my first film back in 89 and 90. Yep. Came out in 91.
Do you have a good memory of that?
I have a wonderful memory. Take Productions, Kevin. The Wilson, it was great. It was a wonderful experience. Really catapulted me into the world of movie making. You know, I got bit by the bug from Dances, and been fortunate enough to be making 2-3 films a year since, and I'm still plugging away.
What do you all hope for this film? The film is still looking to be distributed nationwide and so on. What's your best hope?
Hope it's a hit. Hope's a hit and people see it.
What do you want them to take away from the film? I know what I took away.
I hope it moves people. I hope it really, it's one of those films that it sticks with you for a couple days where you're thinking about it. You know, I've seen movies that have impacted me where I had to sit with it for a day or two to have it move them a little bit and have them get into a discussion, a thought process, and, you know, talk about it.
I hope they walk away a little bit with a sense of compassion as well, and they get to learn something, and, you know, they get a little peek in through a window that is not often opened.
Congratulations to all of you on the film. I think it's just a great success. And I know you all have other films you've done and are going to do, but to me, this will be one that you can be proud of your whole life, I'm sure. I've been speaking with Chaske Spencer and Michael Spears and Dana Wheeler Nicholson, who are all in the new film, Winter in the Blood. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Continental Divide, tonight expect clear skies with lows in the 40s to lower 50s. Tomorrow look for sunny skies with highs in the upper 80s to mid 90s. For central Montana tonight, expect mostly clear skies with a chance of isolated showers and thunderstorms. Lows will be around 50 to 60 degrees. Tomorrow expect sunny skies with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Highs will be in the lower 80s. And for southwest Montana tonight, calls for clear skies with lows between 45 to 55 degrees. Tomorrow, nothing but sunny skies with highs in the lower 90s. And now for the editorial comments of Julia Altimus.
As the U.S. House and Senate inched towards a conference committee on the Farm Bill last week, some believe the failure of Congress to pass a Farm Bill in 2012, instead passing a 9-month extension, and the current stalemate illustrates how impotent this policy has become. Some believe the extension was a gift to the taxpayer, who would have been stuck with paying for potentially exorbitantly expensive insurance and price support subsidies, while others believe the extension eviscerated a score of important programs. With congressional leaders on both sides of the aisle searching for inefficient, wasteful, and outdated programs at a time when federal budget deficits have simply become unsustainable, one thing is for sure. Instead of addressing the urgent challenges our farm, food, and wood fiber system faces, the Farm Bill has become a patchwork of programs that not only fails to support each other, but are often contradictory. Without a larger discussion about long-term goals for a system we want and can afford, this failure is no surprise. A potential solution being brought forward by House Agriculture Committee Chairman Frank Lucas is a replacement of permanent agricultural laws from 1938 and 1949 with a commodity title, which would allow the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, better known as SNAP or food stamps, to continue as an appropriated entitlement rather than be formally reauthorized. It is still unclear when the House will agree to a conference committee and whether negotiators can produce a bill that could pass that chamber. Early indications are that the Republican version of the bill will be unacceptable to nearly all Democrats. Senate Agriculture Chairwoman Debbie Sabineau formally requested a conference on the Farm Bill last week while she and other Senate leaders joined administration officials in chastising the House for separating farm programs from SNAP. A group of Republican House members began meeting last week to discuss the standalone nutrition title, and a published report indicated they were considering cuts in the neighborhood of $120 to $130 billion over 10 years, 6 times greater than the amount the original Farm Bill would have cut. If the Senate conferees demand a conference report that includes nutrition programs, it is unclear whether House conferees would report it back to the House or whether it could even pass if they did. Unfortunately, many good programs funded by the Farm Bill are caught in the food stamp crossfire. Forest management, as well as forest research and forestry assistance, has long been within the jurisdictions of the agriculture committees. Although most forestry programs are permanently authorized, forestry has usually been addressed in the periodic farm bills. The 2008 Farm Bill contained a separate forestry title with provisions establishing national priorities for forestry assistance. These provisions required statewide forest assessments and strategies, provided competitive funding for certain programs, created new programs for open space conservation and for emergency reforestation, and prohibited imports of illegally logged wood products. Forestry provisions were included in other titles as well. The conservation title revised the definition of conservation actions to include forestry activities for all conservation programs. The trade title required special reporting on softwood lumber imports, and the energy title established 2 woody biomass energy programs. And the tax title included 3 provisions altering tax treatments for forests and landowners. These are all good provisions and are awaiting reauthorization. In addition, the 2013 House-Senate versions include several new and important forestry-related provisions, with the majority originating in the House version. Provisions include codifying the silvicultural rule, repealing the Administrative Appeals Act, extending stewardship contracting, expanding forest health by including a 10,000-acre categorical exclusion for hazardous fuel reduction projects, expanding the Good Neighbor Authority, a categorical exclusion for salvage projects after a declared disaster, and a Know Your Customer provision directing the U.S. Forest Service to analyze how the national forests are meeting the needs of nearby wood consumers. The Farm Bill is reauthorized every 5 years. Assuming Congress will find a path forward and pass a bill this year, now is the time to address the many challenges facing our farm, food, and wood fiber systems before the 2013 Farm Bill expires in 2018. We need a public policy agenda that supports a fair and sustainable system that builds resiliency and is able to withstand shocks in the marketplace, climate-induced events, and many other economic and environmental challenges. On behalf of the Montana Wood Products Association, I am Julia Altimus. Thanks for listening. Julia Altimus is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetich. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.